something went on here, something went on there. And
this time on TNT.
We blow the lid off the video hit scandal.
We play some reminisce songs.
And am I into NASCAR? That's all coming up right now on TNT.
Time to reminisce.
Yeah.
With Taggart and Torrance.
Yeah.
I'm gonna play some songs, and then you take me to the place.
Yeah.
They take you.
Is that the first song, or that was just the theme song for the?
Well, it could be. Sure, it could be. Like, what does that remind you?
Well, reminds
me of a kid. Kids days.
Definitely. We used to sometimes in Sherwood PEI. The family would go out to dinner, and we'd go to the Canton Cafe where you and I have been.
Yeah.
Remember, they have the great egg rolls.
For sure.
Although some people like the place across the street, I think the China Garden. But for me, okay. It's just nostalgia. It was every egg roll has a bite of the 1970s in it. And
yeah.
There was a server there who had like a big kind of beehive do. And when I would go there, she would give me... a Nestle chocolate bar, like in exchange for a hug, that kind of thing.
Nice.
That's what it makes me think of. Like, we're there, we're pounding some chicken balls, a couple egg rolls, and then, oh, it's a Jersey Milk. That's the bar I would get.
Oh,
in exchange for a hug,
sure.
Or sit on my knee for a minute, that kind of thing. And I sort of liked it, but it sort of felt weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where is she
so,
tonight?
Yeah, that's like reminiscing from the Little River Band would be a jam for sure, just on the radio there. Did they have tunes going?
Yeah, they did. And my sister, Diana, had a car and would sometimes drive me to school. And that was the first memory I have of like Little River Band, Styx, Burton Cummings. And they were all 8-tracks.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Like just pounding 8-tracks on the drive to into Charlottetown from Sherwood.
Okay, how about this one? You know that intro.
Wow.
Burning in Love by Honeymoon Sweet. Love. The nails on the bed and the album cover.
I'm going to say that reminds me of Video Hits with Sam Taylor.
Nice.
Do you remember?
Of course,
but do you remember Sam Taylor, or do you just remember
Dan? I remember Sam Taylor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I probably had a crush on Sam Taylor as a kid.
Yeah, I probably did too.
Yeah.
That was a great gig when you think about it.
For sure. You could just play like, it was half an hour, right? So just like bang through 4 videos and just like, that's that.
Jeremy, how many Video Hits hosts can you name?
Was Stu Jeffries one of them?
No, that was Good Rockin' Tonight. Good!
Oh, that's right.
Rockin' Tonight! The joke was he would say, "We'll be right back on Good!" And it would go to commercial, and then on the other side of the commercial, he'd come back with Rockin' Tonight!
Video Hits... I can't remember. Who was after her again?
Sam Taylor. Then there was Dan Gallagher. He was on Video Hits before he was on Much Music.
Yeah, and then he was on Test Pattern.
Yeah.
And Much Music, and he was great.
Yeah, it was great.
He was one of those guys who really liked to party. He was always out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Good guy.
So after Dan Gallagher was... You don't remember.
Video Hits?
Yeah, Brian Elliott.
Brian Elliott. See, I always get them crossed because as a kid, I didn't have satellite or cable, so I didn't have Much Music.
Yeah, but that wasn't Much Music. I think that was
CBC. No, but I'm saying cable, so I'm saying I cross-reference. I did have Video Hits, but I kind of didn't really know a lot of those shows because also when I lived in Mansfield as a kid, I don't even think we got Video Hits.
Right.
Because it might have been a little fuzzy.
So nothing Sam Taylor hosted till 1989. Oh, wow. Brian Elliott took over in 89 and then Dan Gallagher. And it was changed to Dan Gallagher's Video Hits. And then in 1990, the series would sometimes devote a special episode to a single artist under the rubric Video Hits Presents. Who wrote this
I'm pretty sure I saw like Thriller on Video Hits.
Sure you did. Would take up half the episode.
For sure.
Okay.
Who, do you want to go to the next one?
I want to talk about the fact that whoever wrote the Wikipedia definition for video hits used the word rubric. And instead I want to look up what it means. A heading on a document. That's a terror. That's really obnoxious to use a word like rubric. So there's actually more Canadianity to be discovered here. Dan Gallagher took over after Brian Elliott. It was called Dan Gallagher's Video Hits. It was on at the same time as Good Rockin' Tonight. Then they would occasionally do an entire episode of Video Hits devoted to one artist called Video Hits Presents.
Then
Video Hits Presents evolved into the music documentary series. Can you name it? You guys are probably on it.
Probably.
Ear to the Ground.
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea.
You remember that show?
Also, there was the new music on City TV, which was kind of branched from Much. But I saw more of that being closer to Toronto as well. But still, be fuzzy, old Channel 57 styles.
Interesting. Here's something crazy, and then we can go to the next song. But this is really interesting.
You're not gonna shout out the great Denise Donlan and J.D. Roberts and their classic stars.
They're Much Music people, though.
No, but the new music. I mean, that show.
Yeah, that's a great show. Strombo's great on that show too.
Ended up in Strombo's hands. Yeah.
Yes.
And that show, when you were on it, you had to do it. You had to make it.
Yeah.
As in, you know, most anything that happens in that Much environment, it's like. The person talking on the camera is grinding it out afterwards.
Yeah.
Putting it all together.
Yeah. You wore a lot of hats there.
Oh, man. I remember it's like, hosting the top 10. I got to come up with a top 10. It's like, wow, man.
You're doing it. If you're there, you're doing
it. That's how hardcore is that for TV, man?
Pretty fun job, though.
Fun job, but it's like, I don't know. Like, you figured, you know... Maybe put some money into some of that to make it easier on that, plus the content better overall.
Okay, I need to close the loop on this, because it's going to blow your mind.
We're never going to get to the next channel.
It's all right. We have time.
All right, I know.
The entire run of Video Hits no longer exists in CBC's archives. Wait for it. Aside from a handful of short clips available online, usually transferred from people's home VHS recordings of the show, all episodes are lost. Here it comes. Ready? This is a highly unusual practice for CBC, which, unlike most networks, almost never destroyed recordings. Therefore, it is considered most likely that the recordings of Video Hits episodes were destroyed for legal reasons.
Wow.
Specifically... the requirements set by record labels when signing contracts with the CBC to license their music video catalogs. It's a conspiracy, CBC.
That's what happened. All of a sudden, they had all this stuff with all this music, and they're like, yeah, but you can't play the music anymore.
Yeah, because Universal's like, yeah, you got to pay us every time.
Oh, man.
So here's an interesting thing. Someone on Twitter in the last couple of weeks was like, hey, CBC, I was on an episode of Jonavision. Can you upload it? And they're like, unfortunately, we're not allowed to air it. So I emailed my friend Lynn Harvey, who produced the show, and was like, that's kind of weird. Why aren't they allowed to air it? She was like, I don't know. Let me ask the archives. So it turns out there are union issues. So if
everything's locked down?
Yeah, it was probably only bought out for 5 years or something. So if they uploaded all that stuff to Gem, they'd have to pay Uncle Jono, and they don't want to.
Yeah.
So unless Canada demands to see Jonovision, it'll probably never happen.
Honestly, they should have a gem classic because there's so much content that's great that's not doing anything. And if they're just going to cry and hide about it and just leave it and say we can't touch this at all, instead of like letting people see. So there's stuff that we don't, you know, we haven't seen, you know, in the 60s and 70s when all the artists and comedians and just stars all over and other walks would come to Canada or Canadians themselves, the doors were open to creative people, and they would just say, go record whatever you want, or let's make some shows, or you want to make them whatever you can in here, let's do it. There's just archives and archives of incredible performances. And
well, that's what I loved about working there, because especially when I was going through a Lightfoot phase, I could just go down to the archives
and take out, like, hours, right? Hours and hours.
Well, I forget the name of the show he was on in the 60s, like Coconut Square, like one of those shows.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm going to look it up. Cause he,
where they just, like, throw to him?
He was, like, a square dancer. It was like his first thing on CBC, and he was worried because he's like, I can sing. I don't know how to square dance, but I mean, I'll try.
That's a classic. Yeah, I'll get whatever I can do to get going here.
Country Hoedown, that's the show. 60 to 62.
Wow.
From the vault. Anyway, it's interesting to me that that's where some of that stuff ended up.
Yeah. Glenn Gould ripping it up in the studio.
Yeah. I'm sure they kept that.
Well, they had lots of artists and musicians come in and record stuff.
I wonder,
for
like,
decades.
Imagine being the person that had to destroy video hits. I wonder if they were like, I'm going to rip a VHS first. Crazy. Anyway, there you go. Okay, what's the next jam?
The next jam. Well, let's get it going here. It is one of your favorite artists. I'm going to try and cue it up close to the... what I would think is the chorus.
Are you just guessing by where in like 52 seconds?
Oh, I went a little too far.
I do a mean Sade. I'm gonna tell you exactly where I am.
Okay.
When I moved to Halifax, I decided to make a fashion change, and I went from UPEI sweatpants to Le Chateau. And there was a Le Chateau on Spring Garden Road. There was a guy who worked there named Condon McLeod, who actually became a real good buddy of my mom's. And one of those like dudes around town who like started a teen club with like rock bands, like just really gave a cool social outlet to teenagers in town who were kind of restless and treated them like adults, and was nice. Just one of those like way ahead of his time awesome dudes. So this song, I'm in Le Chateau on Spring Garden Road, the music's blasting, and I'm coming out of the dressing room in like suspenders and plaid pants and tricolor high tops and all the 80s
so what
stuff.
Is this like your first like I'm getting clothes, or is this like it, like a normal week? Like I'm just, this is what me getting clothes.
No, this is like
a transformation moment. Like I want to go out and get clothes.
Yeah, or? Sure. The first thing that happened when I moved to Halifax was I got a decent haircut for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
So once I had some good hair going, and you know, you start a new school as you did a bunch of times too, you can sort of reinvent yourself a little bit and think like, who am I here? But I went from, like, street hockey, suburbs, knew everyone in my village, to living in an apartment building in a city where I knew no one in the summer. So that was a pretty crazy adjustment.
Yeah. So, yeah, you had to get some threads.
Had to get some good threads going.
Yeah, so what do you remember? Was it vibrant?
What, the threads? Stuff?
Yeah, was it like all just like bright colors?
Yeah, it was like
sweaters with like bright colors and
yeah, sweater vests and knit ties
and with some leather on there.
Yeah, wore like color blocking.
Yeah, Some of those like t-shirts that change colors, the Varnays.
I didn't have those. I was always like stylish adjacent. Like everyone had a Far West jacket, and I had a Sierra Designs. Like
any cool clothes I had were hand-me-downs from like Elliot and Fraser, my cousins.
Yeah.
So it was like if it was one of those shirts that didn't work anymore, the color changers.
Yeah.
I had like a cool Coca-Cola rugby shirt where it's like, wow, where'd you get that shirt? Like hand-me-down styles.
Cousins hand-me-downs.
Cousin hand-me-downs.
It's a very specific breed of hand-me-down too.
Yeah, for sure. He always had good stuff.
Okay, hit me with the next jam. This is fun.
Okay,
what the fuck is this? My definition of a boombastic jazz style.
Yeah.
This is like 1989, 90.
Sure it is. It's Dream Warriors, my definition of a boombastic jazz style.
Yeah.
I'm more of a Ludi guy, if we're putting it all out there.
No,
Ludi was a jam.
Well, we've played Ludi on the pod before.
Have we?
Yeah.
Obviously, I love my definition because it samples the theme song from Definition. Yeah. Jim Perry.
Which is... Yeah, like that's a classic
only Canadian show.
Only Canadian show that was not on anywhere in America.
Classic Canadian show. I would say with this is like Saturday morning watching Much Music, waiting for Speaker's Corner to come on. And this is like a video that they played all the time.
Yeah.
They're Canadian, right? Dream Warriors?
Yep.
And he had the stick.
The stick. The staff.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's, they were great.
Did you ever cross paths with the Maps?
I don't think so. Maybe at like early Much Music Awards, maybe.
Yeah.
And if I ever, if I ever did, it would be like a hey bud, like how's it going?
What's going on, Styles? Man?
Those early Much Music Awards were insane because there was no stages or anything. Bands were just set up amongst people. In rooms all over the place. Yeah. So it'd be like, it's just, you know, you play and then you've got to set up and move in another just to get a different look, right? A different feel. So like, it was pretty bizarre. Yeah. But whatever, they made it work.
Did you see some...
But people would just get really banged up. It was classic. Everybody was just so banged up. And then they would go to an after place and it would get even more banged up.
Just get wild. The thing that I liked about Much Music is that it was obviously warts and all in the early days, and that was kind of the thing that was different about it. But you always got the sense anything could happen, and I love when you're watching Rick the Temp, Michael Williams walks by in the background.
Yeah.
Like, no way, there's that other guy. It's crazy.
Yeah, those were some crazy parties.
Did they have, they bring in the big American names then?
No, not early on.
There was only Vanilla Ice is here.
No, it was only Canadian bands, really. Like, I don't remember anything bigger than, like, the biggest Canadian bands.
So what was the pecking order?
Early days. But then once it became massive, it was the other way around, obviously.
What was the pecking order? Yeah, like, who are the kings or queens?
We went from like this tiny room to like the huge stage, but like by the time we were headlining it, that was just about the time they started bringing in international acts.
Right.
So eventually, you know, it's like the biggest thing. How do you compare when they're bringing in massive artists from around the world? But it was always a good time.
Did you ever think like about any of those things at the time? Like, oh man, we've done it the last 3 years. Do we have to do the Much Music Awards?
Oh, for sure. Definitely.
And so were those things band conversations?
No, you just kind of, but the thing about us is we I think there was enough time between records. It was never like, oh, we just did that. There was always a good amount of time, and we were always conscious never to tour the country more than once
a year
on an album.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So in that sense, we probably underdid it, and we could have definitely played more, but there's definitely overdoing it. You don't want to do that where you play 14 times a year.
No.
In your hometown, and it's like no one's coming anymore. Like, eventually you're going to start wearing yourself out.
Is there like notorious over-tourers?
Yeah.
Who are the they're out like, again?
Yeah, I'm talking about like people who have a hit and they go out and they're banging in a big place and then they just keep banging because people will buy tickets. So eventually it's like they wonder why they're not playing an arena if they just keep coming back and doing like, you know, three nights in a 2,000 seat place. Because they should have held off and just done the one tour and then they could have done an arena. But that's what happens.
Who has a reputation of being like, not over touring, but being like notorious road banger. Like, who's work ethic?
Road bangers? Yeah. Well, there's some bands don't give a shit. They just go out and they play anyway, as many times as they can, because that's what they do. But I mean, unless you have a following around the world, and you can kind of keep up. I don't know. It's some bands. It's like literally a lifestyle, and they have to keep going.
Right.
But, I mean, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of bands that are more seasoned bands that just go out and they probably tour once a year, once every 2 years. But there's like a healthy routine that they go through that makes sense for them. And if they know their audience, you know, if they have an understanding of what their audience wants. And I mean, if you have an opportunity to go in a different, if you open up for somebody else, and that's, you always can do that till the cows come home. But if you're doing your own shows, you're best to be just doing that once on a record or once on a cycle. And if you're older, I don't even know what the hell. If I was a band that like was like a classic band, like a type of an OLP type. Not OLP specifically, but if I was a band like that, I would just kind of play shows and tours and somehow find ways to maybe have one song or something. Because you see a lot of bands that do that. I think Counting Crows do that, where it's just they'll have a song and they'll find like an ad on TV and they'll go and tour based on one song, as opposed to, you know, making a whole album. There's a lot of ways to go through it, some bands just want to keep making records because they like the feeling of that, and their fans actually dig records.
Hey, Jer.
If you have a big enough fan base, then they appreciate the whole albums.
Would you...
Some people just want to come see the hits, and that's the end of that.
Would you jump on Counting Crows tour right quick?
I'd be pounding Mr. Jones.
It's been a
every night.
Long December, and there's reason
I'd be hearing this all day at the... at the end of long December.
Drove up to Hillside Manor sometime after 2 a.m. and I talked a little while about the year.
When I hear those songs like Long December and that, I just think it reminds me of like doing pre-production at Sony, the actual Sony building on Leslie, where they manufactured CDs. So they had like a sound stage you could practice in, but like going to the bathroom, you look and they're like, you see, you know, Clumsy's getting made.
That must be quite a rush.
It's pretty, well, it definitely feels like you're feeding the machine. In that regard, you know, like you don't feel like it's like, hey, you know, we got this thing in the band. Like when you see the actual
making sausages,
Yeah, it just kind of takes away a little
like,
bit.
Gork, like, really, it
feels so big and corporate, but that they would have much music always playing so I'd be like walking to the can and I all the songs from that era, that year, those years, like what is that, 96, 7, 8, 9. Mm-hmm. I just remember like walking down that hallway and hearing them on whatever the hit thing is on Much Music.
It's been a long December. There's
like reason. I'm going to take a piss and I'm coming back.
That guy's dating resume is bananas.
Yeah, like I'd put that guy up against anybody in the world in terms of the amount of different celebrities he slept with.
Like, first of all, the cast of Friends.
Yeah, right.
Just, like, collected them all. And then there's always weird ones like, wow, Chelsea Clinton. I didn't know that. Like, he has some far-reaching tentacles. Well, I think I made up Chelsea Clinton. Adam Dervitz is his name, right?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Well, I guess you could just kind of look at it.
Yeah, the first prompt that comes up is girlfriends. Jennifer Aniston, Christina Applegate, Winona Ryder.
Every female, like, television person.
Mary Louise Parker. Emmy Rossum. Lamb of God. What is his thing? Samantha Mathis? Wow.
And probably a lot of, like, sidey sneakies as well.
Sneaky
right?
Sidos?
Part of the parties and stuff.
Grow up to Hillside, man. Sometime after 2 a.m.
Slipping in the closet.
Monica Potter. This is outrageous.
Cool. It's like a... It sounds like you're reading an award show.
I know.
Like, who's there?
Please welcome Courtney Cox, Winona Ryder, Jennifer Aniston, and Mary Louise Parker.
he's standing up on stage.
Yeah. Trishelle, I think she was a reality show star. Christina Applegate, like, this guy is outrageous.
This is so funny.
I remember
being at the Viper Room one night, and the Christina Applegate was there, and I was ordering a drink, and I just said, "Hey, how's it going?" And like she was like really mean to me. I was like, "Listen, I'm not asking you anything. I'm just saying hello for fuck's sake. You don't have to be so mean to me." One of those.
What did she say?
I don't know, but this get away from me is what I don't know what it's something like.
No.
That. Yeah. I was like, man, I didn't even say anything. It's like, wow. Tightly wound.
Christina Applegate.
Yeah.
Really? She's so good on that show.
That's why.
With Wilma
that's
from
generally why I.
Whatever that is.
That's why I generally try not to talk to. Celebrities.
Oh, I generally try not to, too.
Because it seems to be just like some drama that I don't know what's going on, but no thanks. In public spaces.
Okay, so here's a question. Adam Dervitz has dated those people. John Mayer has dated Aniston, Jessica Simpson, Minka Kelly from Friday Night Lights, and Jennifer Love Hewitt.
I don't even know who that is.
Whose dating resume is more impressive?
Well, like I said, they're both out on the road constantly.
What does that mean?
So who? Well, whatever. They're just doing that all the time. I don't know if they're single still or what, but like the continual madness.
I know, but then it's like...
It up.
Then suddenly it's like Adam Duritz is 54 dating Vanna White.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing,
no,
man?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Drove up to Hillside Manor.
I know. Like if someone's like, man, I'm... You know, people are like, yeah, I'm having sex all the time. It's really... Just can't get enough. Like, it's like, I don't need to hear that shit.
Round
like,
here!
You know what I mean? Like, that type of conversation.
I love that the internet has questions like, are the Counting Crows a good band? Like, someone would go to the internet to find to get the answer to that question. Are they a good band? Jeremy, answer that question.
Sure, of course. Any band that's had that kind of a career where they're out there crashing. Crush first, but they crush sales, they pack places all the time.
So yes, they're a good band?
Yeah, for sure. Why not?
Hmm.
You don't think so? Their first couple records are pretty solid, man. It's not bad for... They came out of the gates pretty good. They were pretty good live.
I'm just surprised to hear you say that if they can sell out arenas, that's the metric.
It's not Simon and Garfunkel, but, like, I'm just saying, they had a strong first couple records. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, they're kind of, like, maybe not as... I wouldn't say as I like them as much as R.E.M., but they're kind of like that kind of vibe.
Oh, the lonely deep said hello. Which band, for your money, never got their due?
There's so many.
Who's the best band that should be household names, but for whatever reason aren't?
I don't know, man. Because I think because there's lots of bands that I respect musically that are out working that wish we're all rich. So it's like, there's other bands that, like, I think the Odds should have been a lot bigger.
Same.
Right? Like, they were such a great live band, great players. They had really, like, catchy, great songs.
My doobie-eyed Madonna.
And I thought they should have had a way bigger career. I don't know what the hell's going on with that. Sloan should be a worldwide great rock.
True story.
Rock band.
Like, there's hit lots of them. Factory.
Even Tragically Hip, like, outside of Canada. It's just, you'd think they would have more of an impact in America.
What kind of...
They do, and there's a lot of people that they had a lot of fans in a lot of cities. But it just, I don't know why they didn't translate on the same level in Canada. I mean, you could say the same about OLP. In a lot of places, we did do well in America and pretty well in Europe, but nothing in comparison to Canada. But I'm just talking about when a band has success in one place, and you wonder why it doesn't translate. There's a countless amount of Canadian bands that have that.
Heterosexual Man by Odds is a great song. Also, Craig, what's Craig's last name? He plays with Stephen Page.
Northy?
Craig Northy, yeah. Like, yeah. So many people in music are, like, talk about him with reverence.
Mm-hmm.
And he's...
Yeah, they were all, like, seasoned great players.
But was it Stephen who sang the, like, heterosexual man? Is that Stephen?
I think so, yeah. Well, if you watch the videos, you'll know.
Right. Eat My Brain, that's Steven.
Yeah.
Phenomenal band. Love that band. Earworm Farmers from way back.
For sure. You ready for the next jam?
Yes, I am. And I'm excited to talk about NASCAR.
Okay, it's after this song.
Okay, hit me.
This is like water slide music. Going up the steps to the water slide. Dancing across town. I bet you used to dance across town. No.
I definitely used to dance to this. In junior high, I would leave the dances soaked from dancing.
Oh yeah, unless you're... Yeah. Yeah.
What year is that?
You gotta get in there. I'm gonna say, like, what, 83 or something? 82, 83.
Okay, so I would have been just about to start junior high. I mean, the first thing that popped into my head was a junior high
maybe
dance
later,
at Barbie Junior High. But the most recent version of this song was a cover by Blake Shelton.
I remember dancing to that song, even in like grade six, jamming out. Yeah,
we had a sock hop in grade six.
The side steps dancing.
Yep. Slow shuffle.
Just getting right into things. Just enjoying your day, having a great day, dancing to tunes.
That one doesn't.
And then some stupid dirt balls had to get us ended. They ended the dancing. There ain't no dancing anymore.
I know.
You can't dance in class. Can't go. Like, you're not really allowed to, like, there's like a, it's kind of like
Footloose?
Prison rules. No, like playgrounds at the school. It's kind of like prison rules. You know, they don't want to see anyone with their arms out and touching anybody else. You got to keep your hands to yourselves.
Is that because of the COVID or because of generally?
No, this was... This was prior to, this is more just to do with like fights and physical issues and, you know, someone getting hurt.
Like, don't be touching people.
Yeah. Keep your hands off that person. Like, it's one thing to like high five or be hanging out, but like no wrestling, grabbing, like prison styles. Keep your hands rocking to you.
So there's no like, what is that game when you're on top of the mountain? You have to like, everyone comes up, you have to chuck them down.
No, yeah, you can't play any of that
really?
Stuff for sure. Yeah. No way.
What about Red Rover?
I don't know. I don't think anything. I remember back in the day playing football and just getting crushed.
Yeah. Yeah, and then even if it was two-hand touch, you could still use your two hands to pull someone down by the shoulder blades.
And there were fights all the time. So it's like... now it's just bullying, incessant bullying. Which is almost worse. You don't see the fighting as much, but you hear the taunting and the chirps.
How?
Oh, kids chirp hard, man.
Do they?
They'll make fun of a kid for having an old phone and just...
No.
Like, oh, yeah, whatever it is, they'll find ways to just make someone's life crappy. It's the worst.
Wow.
They're out there, man. They're out there.
Indigo's class, they got to do a presentation yesterday about something about them.
Yeah.
Themselves, and she took her phone collection. She's been collecting phones since she was about two, and everyone in the family knows when they're finished with an old phone, they give it to Indy, and she's really interested in gadgets. She doesn't have a phone that works yet.
Has she started to like look for other ones, other old phones?
Yeah, well, like she watches this guy named Mr. Who's the Boss, who's this British dude that is a tech reviewer. And, like, that's what she'll watch just to enjoy. He'll buy, like, here, I bought the 50 tiniest phones. I bought the 5 most expensive phones. And he just reviews them. Yeah. Like, she's just really into phones.
Interesting.
Curious.
Because John collects old video game consoles and stuff.
Does he?
Like, not a ton, but, like, he keeps his... He has certain things he likes, but his room now... He's got all kinds of like old games and old consoles. It's pretty cool. You know, when you go into a used game or even a video game store and you see behind the glass like all the old stuff.
Yeah.
That's John's room now. Over the last like, I don't know, almost 10 years.
Can he play them? Like, can he play with them? Or
yeah, they're all they're all usable. Everything.
Crazy.
So yeah, he'll fire up an old, you know, original PlayStation or the Nintendo originals or the, I don't know if he has Atari, but he's got a lot of like just kind of the stuff from the 80s and on.
Wild. I would like to have, like, Ed has a bunch of those, right? A bunch of like pinball machines and stuff. I'd like to have a Miss Pac-Man or something.
He has new pinball machines, not old. I thought he had like a bunch of classic old pin. He's like, no. He's got like the cutting edge, coolest. Like, he's a geek, like a full on pinball nutcase.
Like a wizard of sorts, would you say?
a pinball wizard. Yeah, but he's got groups of friends that like buy and collect and trade these things. It's a whole world. It's pretty interesting. And then but not to mention he knows how to fix it all, right? Like he can.
He does?
Yeah, he can open it up and upgrade it or find out what's wrong with it.
It's a whole new world.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing. You immerse yourself in stuff that you dig, right? Or whatever your interests. And he's lucky enough to have had a great career to be able to do that. And that's awesome.
I get it. Yeah. What is the... I know they sometimes take pinball machines on the road, right? What is the...
I think he's got a bunch on the road, yeah.
What is the greatest extravagance of any touring act you've ever heard? What is it like? Apparently they have a, I don't know, massage room or...
Well, like bands would take motorbikes out and like, you know, cabanas and like... setups for like so they could put you know have a literal look like a dining room all of a sudden outside of the bus.
That's pretty fun.
You know what I mean, so it depends on cars. They're bringing out cars, just like an extra semi just for a car.
Like I'm gonna take my car on the road.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, I mean, it's if you're going to be spending money, I'm sure nowadays it must be way crazier than that. But that's the only, like, I think, like, for us, it was like, maybe you could bring a set of golf clubs.
But real estate was at a premium?
Yeah, for sure. There's only four bays underneath, and you don't want to be bringing too many bags, like one bag on the bus and everything else underneath. Can't be bringing bikes and frickin' scooters and.
Fortunately, your Adidas shorts were tiny.
Yeah, my fiance.
Okay, so Jeremy, is that it for jams?
No, here's another
okay,
one.
Okay, hit me.
You want it? Too bad, Doug and the Slugs. Classic. What are you doing to this? I know you don't probably like. It's not like something you necessarily listen to, but it takes you somewhere.
Yeah, it sure does.
Yeah.
I'll tell you exactly where.
Okay.
Brackley Beach, NPEI. Yeah. My friend Jason Lee, who was a great friend with a great sense of humor, someone I haven't seen in a while, but solid dude. He would sometimes come to the beach with me and my sister, or I'd go with his family, and he'd take a transistor radio or a tape player. And we'd listen to tunes like Huey Lewis and the News and Doug and the Slugs. So I'm 8-10 years old on Brackley Beach in PEI. People from my school there. Water's warm. Nice summer day. That's what that reminds me of.
Nice. Okay, I have one last one. And this is kind of one of those ones that it's like, it was definitely an era because it never, I don't think it was a big other than anywhere other than Canada, but it's a classic. I've been a fool, played it dumb. Should've played it smart. Used my head, but not my heart. Remember the last of the Red Hot Fools?
Must've been crazy, played sure it do. I should've played it cool. Now I'm just the last of the Red Hot Fools. Oh, everybody said you
were an easy man. So, hey, the jitters. Blair Packham and the boys?
What year? Because I know where I think I heard it. I know where it took me immediately.
I think it's like 87 or something, 86, 7 around there. That's my guess.
Because the first thing that popped into my head was Skate Country in PEI, roller skating. The cool kids could skate backwards. So if you could skate backwards, you could kind of waltz on roller skates. Otherwise, you skated holding hands around in a circle. I couldn't skate backwards, so I remember skating around forwards, holding hands sometimes. But that mostly I skated by myself. That's where I went in my mind.
So I remember those skating rinks being a big deal. That was
the roller skating big time, especially because there was like that, when it was dark, what is that called? You know,
whatever, they'd have the disco jam.
Yeah. But if you're wearing a white t-shirt, it would glow. What is that called?
Oh, the fluorescent light.
Yeah. Fluorescent lighting.
Yeah. Yeah. So if somebody had a mess on their shirt, it looked brutal, or their teeth were all crazy looking. Classic.
Yeah. But when they turn the lights down, people get right into things, I think, in the shadows.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where it took me.
Like chubby sparkles.
Yeah, get right into things.
Time for some shadow work. That's great.
Those were great picks. I'll tell you, you texted me beforehand and said, I have this idea for a game. It's all about recollections. And I was like, well, it only works if they're songs that I've heard of, because I imagine you playing songs that I hadn't heard of and they wouldn't inspire reactions. So before we move on, let me just say thank you, sir. I really enjoyed that. Those songs all did trigger visceral reactions to a different time. That was really fun.
No problem. Yeah, I figured they would. I wasn't going to pick any weird ones.
Yeah. I figured it was going to be Cooch Jujuruju on the Chapman stick. Come on, man. You don't know
that
one?
In that regard, then it would be I'm going to play something that I probably know you don't know. And just for a reaction, which wouldn't be as fun.
Right.
It's more about taking you back. Taking you back.
Right, I liked it.
So I got some, I'm packing it up here, getting ready for things. Good times. Taking measurements, was just at the house last week for the last time before we take ownership on the 30th.
Any regretskis?
No, none. Just excited to get into things. We're really, we're amped up to get ready and settle in and move on. We got a lot of work to do at the beginning just to get it set up. And of course, the wonder of the supply of everything. There is no supply. Even if you want a kitchen from IKEA, you can't get a kitchen from IKEA.
Oh, it's no joke.
Yeah. So, whatever we can't get on auction and find, for flooring or whatever, then we'll just go in and go as we go, as opposed to thinking we could do more before we move in. So it's fine though, it's all good.
I was in a furniture store the other day looking for a fridge for my sister, and the guy said, fridges and stoves are 6 months out now, and furniture companies have stopped even estimating because it's supplier issues for them. Like the foam factory is behind, or the staple place is just hard to predict. And it's also an important time to remember what is actually a problem. It's not a problem. It's a luxury to be able to put new flooring down, but it does make you think you should plan ahead. This guy was saying that people are planning to do renovations next summer and have already ordered appliances and furniture and paid for them just so they'll hang on to them.
Well, if you want to get stuff done next summer, you have to kind of do it now. That's where crazy stuff it is. So unless you can source it out in other ways. And even now I've noticed the auctions are way higher across the board.
Curious.
And Lisa was telling me the same thing, that auctions, stuff that you could get for a song is now going for a regular price. So I guess it's just people have found it out. Enough people have not been able to get anything. So the auctions have become part of, the normal routine now for a lot of people, which makes sense. But the secret's out there.
You put it out there. You people, put it out there.
People like me. I didn't say the name of the place.
Do you mean people like me? Like people like you or people who are like me?
People that are like Lisa more than me. That are just into sourcing stuff more than what you can if you can't find it.
AuctionCityUSA.ca.
She's sourced some nice wide plank flooring for $3 a square foot, which is insane.
Where?
Industrial wide plank. I'm not sure what kind of wood it is, but it's...
Doesn't matter. I love me a wide plank.
Yeah, so I'm not even going to say where.
My little apple farm in outside of Windsor, Nova Scotia had 14-inch planks. Ooh. Little semi-transparent Ooh. Colored stain.
Yeah.
Boom. Jeremy, I want to talk about NASCAR.
Boom. Oh, yeah, let's hear about NASCAR.
So my father-in-law watches NASCAR, and I have watched it before a few times. And for the layperson... It's a bunch of cars that sort of look the same going around in circles.
Going left.
Yes.
In a circle.
But it was Father's Day, and so we were watching, the U.S. Open was on, and NASCAR was on. And for some reason, the drama of this NASCAR race, which I'm told was maybe the least exciting race in a long time because it was a clear winner all the way through.
Yeah.
There was so much drama going on. So... Obviously, the person who crosses the finish line first wins. That much we know. But there are two factors at play in NASCAR. One is fuel, and the other is tires. And a number of factors dictate when you pull in to change your tires. And there's science to it and math. So, for example, if there are 10 laps left and your tires should probably be changed... If you don't change them, a tire could pop and then you hit the wall and you're done. So it's all this kind of risk-reward stuff of like, if you take your foot off the gas for a bit, we can conserve gas for a bit so that we don't have to stop in and fuel up. This was the thing that happened in the NASCAR race that blew my mind. You ready?
Okay.
Guy's driving. He's in first place. he's about to lap somebody. They think he has enough gas. I think there was like 10 laps or so so left. He's about to lap somebody. They think he's good for tires. They think he's good for gas. It's going to be close, but they think he's good. Out of nowhere, debris lands on the grill of the car. The debris is blocking the air intake and therefore messing with the productivity of the car. So I don't know enough about it, but maybe it's using more gas suddenly because less air is getting through. So that would impact the amount of gas they have for him to get to the finish line. And is this gonna ruin his chances of winning, or should he stop and so they can get the debris off, or what do they do? So here's what they did. His crew boss, now I'm just making up terms, talks to the crew chief of the person he's about to lap and says, hey, can we work out a thing? Obviously, air goes in the front of the car, exhaust blows out the back. Can we work out a thing where my guy who's in first pulls up close behind your guy who's in last, and his exhaust will blow the debris off the front of my grill? And the guy in last place is like, Yeah, I mean, we're not going to win today. Sure, we can do that. So watching these guys drive at 170 miles an hour and come, it's like when you see those planes gassing up in midair?
Yeah.
Like the precision and skill involved and margin for error, which simply doesn't exist. Yeah. Anyway.
Not something you can do on the 400.
Exactly. It worked. It worked. Yes. The guy in last place blew the debris off the guy in first place's grill, and he won.
Burled away.
Yeah, he burled away.
Nice.
So I guess the reminder for me was, like anything, sometimes the more you know about it, the more interesting it is. It's like people that aren't familiar with golf or the history or the players or whatever, watching the U.S. Open would be Snore City. But if you know that someone's has a chance to win for the second year in a row, or hasn't won in a while, or is rivals with the guy in his twosome, then it's so much more interesting to watch.
Yeah, Jets, my brother Jets loves his NASCAR.
Does he? Yeah. Well, he's a car guy too, right?
Yeah, he's a big car. He knows about cars. But yeah, he's always watching it, for sure.
Well, it's interesting because apparently
son Doug loves
they used to draw like 100,000 people to the races, and now they're drawing like 30. So the sport is at kind of a crossroads where they're going to have to entertain the notion of hybrid cars or electric cars to try to court a younger generation of fan.
They're really down in that many people, like for real?
Apparently.
That's got nothing to do with like just because of the... See, they need more
stadium. Well, I'm sure that didn't help, but it sounds like their core audience is aging and they're not having... Yeah. This younger generation is not kind of jumping in to the degree that they hoped or needed.
Yeah, interesting.
So something that they've always done is made their drivers very accessible, and you know, they're very media savvy, and I don't know what the future of NASCAR looks like. And wouldn't it stand to reason that just as I'm getting into it, interest in it's going to evaporate? But it was in Nashville for the first time in, I think, 20 years.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
When are you going to be going back to Nashville, do you think?
I don't know. When do you think the border to the States is going to open?
I don't know. End of summer, maybe? August? September?
Yeah.
When do you think? We should have a...
Well, I don't know. Like, estimate. Would you go to the States August, if the middle? Kids weren't vaxxed? How does that work?
Well, John and Jack are, and they will be second back soon. So, yeah, probably.
Crazy.
Because in a lot, like most places, everyone's vaxxed as well, and the numbers are down, showing the same, you know, obviously it's a lot safer. If everybody's been vaccinated, the numbers come down, and it's safer to travel as opposed to... you know,
what a donkey clinic out here with the border opening between New Brunswick and Nova Scotia.
You have to explain that for the bods because, that was pretty bizarre.
So basically,
a bunch of dum-dums showing up.
There are four premiers involved, obviously, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, New Brunswick, and PEI. And the four of them were kind of on the same page about, let's open the Atlantic bubble. On June, I think it was the 27th, and then they were like, you know what, numbers are good, how about the 23rd? And then New Brunswick was like, yeah, let's do that. Also, we're opening to the rest of Canada. And then Nova Scotia was like, that's a bit weird, because we hadn't really talked about it. So it was hard to tell what was science and what was kind of a political shoving match between Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. Meantime, these... folks from like Oxford and Amherst, Nova Scotia, blocked the highway from Nova Scotia to New Brunswick. And the woman who organized the blockade was like, by the way, I've traveled to Ontario 10 times during this and never self-isolated. And then started yelling about the poison that the government put in people's bodies. And I was surprised that someone driving a Saturn can just decide to block the highway, and then people are like, oh, okay, the highway's blocked. I'm surprised it lasted as long as it did.
I know.
And then... Well,
people are polite, I guess.
People are polite, and people are furious, too, but I don't think they got the support that they imagined. It didn't seem to be very well thought out. And then suddenly, lobster companies were like, sorry... We have a truck with $900,000 worth of lobster in it waiting to get through.
Yeah, what are you going to do now?
Can you move, please? So they started arresting masks last night, which they should. I mean, this tinfoil hat woman who's, you know, the premier's last name is Rankin, and she kept calling him Ranklin. Rankin is easily the most famous surname in Nova Scotia, and she didn't have that down. She seemed really... not sure of the details. But people are just at the end of their noodles.
Well, when all they keep talking about freedom and my where's my freedom, like, get out of town.
Yeah.
That's when it's like ticket time, man. Move on. You'll go home and
call. Government shouldn't be able to tell us what to
do. Get back on Facebook where you belong.
That's actually maybe a great place to leave it.
Through. Yeah. Oh, yeah, right.
Get back on Facebook where you belong.
Yeah, bud. Enjoy the summer as it is. Yeah. It's beautiful today. Going to be playing some baseball with the kids.
Are you?
Trying to keep up. Yeah, Lisa and I more actually playing baseball in the park while they hang out. But we're trying to keep on the 10,000 steps train.
Oh, all four of us have Fitbits going. That's the biggest joy in the day when you hit your 10,000.
That's awesome.
Indy's playing soccer and Sugar and I have been playing a lot of catch. Summer vibes, buds.
Wicked, yeah. Well, enjoy your the rest of the week and say hi to everybody.
You too, bud.
Hey, buds. Hey, bud.
Hey, bud.